Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
I'm black. I'm a woman. I love God. I go to church, and I believe in abortion.
At what point did you stake out a feeling in your mind about abortion and whether it's right or should be even allowed?
After my second one.
After your second one?
After my second one.
You did have a second abortion.
I did. It was about 3 days later that I said, this is enough. I sat on my floor and I wept. At that point is when the Lord started to really work on me, because I was tired of being a subpar Christian. I was tired of saying I was a Christian and not acting like one.
Did my ancestors who jumped off the side of the ship and threw their babies over, where are they at? Did they go to hell?
I will never believe that abortion is murder. I cannot. So, yeah, my journey isn't done theologically. But one thing I have no complexities and no doubt about is that reproductive rights are part of God's justice.
Those are excerpts from a recent ABC News feature on black Christians discussing how faith informs their stances on abortion. Well, abortion is, in fact, a justice issue. Think about it. The least able to speak for themselves, to defend themselves, the most vulnerable, the unborn, well, that's ready-made for a true justice approach. So how do we approach abortion as a justice issue? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to be talking about that very thing. Joining us, Kevin McGarry. He's president of Every Black Life Matters. He's chairman of the Frederick Douglass Foundation of California, and he's author of the book Justly Justice. Kevin, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hey, Todd. How are you, sir?
Very well. ABC News recently ran a story about how black Christians' faith shaped their views of abortion. What's your reaction to the story?
Well, I think that there's a lot of misnomers in this whole paradigm. I mean, I saw the article, read it through a couple of times, and what I see are people that are conflating their biblical worldview with social justice somehow, and they are two antithetical moves completely. Social justice is not compatible with a biblical commitment. CRT, critical race theory, is not compatible with the biblical commitment at all, and neither is liberation theology. But right now, today, we have a lot of Christians that somehow feel that it's important to embrace, you know, these antithetical views. Here's a case in point. Here's, you know, if I can sort of shape this or frame it. Abortion is the epitome of systemic racism, and yet you have people, black people, who would stand up and say that they reject and completely abhor racism while standing for abortion. Now, the reason why I say it's the epitome of systemic racism is it was literally started, as we all know, via Margaret Sanger. And one of her famous quotes is, we don't want the word to get out that we want to completely exterminate the Negro population. That's a Margaret Sanger's quote. So that was right when she was starting Planned Parenthood, and that was the goal, that was the intent. That intent is unfortunately masterfully unfolded, and the result is 40% of all abortions in America are black children. When you think about blacks only make up 3% of an effective demographic for Planned Parenthood, that everybody should be insulted, and everybody should be able to see that this is a systemically racist organization and industry targeting explicitly the black community. When I see these things, it's mind-blowing how we embrace such a systemically racist paradigm and all under the auspices of a gospel or a social justice gospel.
What is missing from the popular social justice movement today?
Well, I think what's missing is real justice. Okay, and I wrote a book on deconstructing social justice, racial justice, and human rights. And basically, I took those three industries, and the name of the book, by the way, is Justly Justice, First of all, we all want justice. God has innately put it that sort of characteristic within all humanity. We all want justice. This is, again, an innate human character. But the organizations that would present themselves to be socially just or racially just or human rights organizations in general, they all have one fundamental flaw. And that flaw is they fully, first of all, what I did in this book is I distilled their fundamental stance on what justice means for them. And justice, you know, if you crystallize it for all three of those industries, social justice, racial justice, human rights, based on their website and their definition, it simply means allowing another to come and exist side by side with you. It's an overarching, very nebulous sort of definition, but that's essentially what you can boil it down to. And the ironic thing about it is every single one of these organizations who would purport to be social justice, racial justice, or human rights organizations fully support, and I don't mean partially or tacitly, fully support abortion. They fully support the abortion industry. Now remember, by their definition, justice is allowing someone to merely exist side by side with you. So, but they reject existence. I mean, it's unbelievable what we have here. The essence of, then, of that book is, look, if they purport to be justice organizations and they reject their own standing, we should have those organizations as a free America, and they could be what they want to be, but we should put them in a category of political activism, because that's what they are. First and foremost, they are political, and they're political activists, and that's different from a justice advocate. Dr. Martin Luther King said, look, if we tolerate injustice anywhere, it leads to injustice everywhere. So you can't say, well, no, they mean justice when someone's born. No. If we tolerate the injustice in the womb, then we're actually fundamentally not a justice organization anyway. Because justice begins in the womb, and there's no way around it. You can't, like, figure out another way to sort of characterize it. It begins there. So that's what's sort of crazy and ironic about the times that we're in, is we have all of these organizations running around with their hair on fire talking about systemic racism and injustices while fully supporting fundamental injustices and fundamental human rights.
So you mentioned this before, Kevin. Tell us about Planned Parenthood's roots in racism and eugenics.
First of all, I like to, because I did make a claim that Planned Parenthood and like organizations were systemically racist. So let me just quantify that, just so people don't think that I'm hyperbolic and, you know, have no credibility to say that. Let's just talk about their history and their roots and foundations. The eugenics movement actually began in the United States, and it began by academics and intellectuals like we have today that are talking about CRT, but it's the same kind of a crowd. And fundamentals in the early 1900s. And from their papers and their documents and their research, they exported that to Germany and Hitler. And from the eugenics movement, we get Hitler and we get the extermination of 6 million plus Jews. So genocide is part and parcel of what eugenics brings about. Then we had this lady called Margaret Sanger, who was part of that movement. She was in the sort of academic mix with eugenicists. And she felt that Aryans were superior and that black and brown, you know, minorities and other minorities, but mostly blacks, were reckless breeders and weeds of society and the scourge of society. These are things that she said about blacks. She was a speaker at the Women's KKK at least once and probably multiple times. She was aligned with that organization. And then she decided, look, we really need to figure out a way to really get rid of these black folk. So we can come up with a clever moniker like Planned Parenthood, and seemingly altruistic and nuanced, actually help black people exterminate themselves. So she came up with this scheme called Planned Parenthood, And again, her quote is, "We don't want the word to get out that we want to fully exterminate the Negro population." Her quote, folks, please look it up. So she did that, and Planned Parenthood to this day has put 80 to 90%, I think it's 90 plus percent, but let's give them the benefit of the doubt, 80 to 90% of their Planned Parenthood clinics, these clinics that primarily and fundamentally only provide abortion. They do may provide some little other services, but abortion is their mainstay. And they're targeting the black community for extermination, per Margaret Sanger. Now, some people will say, well, no, that's just where the health care is needed. Okay, well, let's take a look at that. Fundamentally, blacks make up 13% of the population. Of that 13%, 6.5% or so are women. Of that 6.5% that are women, approximately 3% are actually childbearing, 15 to 44. So you have a 3% demographic, and you've got over 90% of all of your resources, all your clinics and all of that, in these to accommodate a 3% demographic. Now, anybody who understands business, this is nonsense. It makes no sense. Nobody would run a business. Nobody would come up with a business model unless it was strategic and purposeful. So it is strategic and purposeful. There's nothing, you know, some people say, well, why can't they just, they actually accommodate all women? Okay, well, if that was a sincere desire, you have Walmart and Targets across the country that have already done demographic research as to where their location should be. Their locations are primarily where large swaths of women of all shapes, sizes, colors, and creeds go to. So if you were Planned Parenthood and you really just wanted to accommodate women, great. Put a plan to start divesting of the black community and start putting these Planned Parenthoods on the backside of Targets and Walmart. They've already done the demographic research. There's no more money you have to spend. So if they were sincere, they would do it that way. The other thing is Planned Parenthood New York actually came out in July of 2020, just last year, and said, yes, Margaret Sanger was a racist bigot. She was systemically racist. We have been acting inappropriately by putting our abortion mills in all of these communities, and we're going to stop. We're going to cease providing the Margaret Sanger Award because she was a racist bigot. So, but what's interesting about that is I didn't see BLM. I didn't see these woke churches. I didn't see these woke pastors. I didn't see anybody marching to Planned Parenthood because they've admitted that they've been systemically racist. I thought we were on the hunt for organizations that are systemically racist. Well, Planned Parenthood admitted. Where's the outcry? Where's the rallies? Where's the protests? None. Zero. And we had all of these people running for office at all levels, federal, state, whatever, that are still proudly boasting that they support Planned Parenthood and Planned Parenthood supports them. Now, it used to be that when we were thinking logically and methodically and prudentially, it used to be if you admit that you're tied to the hip to a systemic racist, guess what? You yourself are systemic racist. So that means that any people, individuals, any parties that say, I'm tied to the hip with Planned Parenthood, after Planned Parenthood admitted their racist machinations, then they have to be, if we're going by the logic that we used to use, they have to be racist. Now, what happened to the outcry? These people actually won office and took over the presidency and this and that. So it's outrageous.
Kevin McGarry is our guest. We're talking about abortion as a justice issue. He is president of Every Black Life Matters. On the other side, why does social justice as a movement support the abortion industry?
Beautiful brown eyes. I pay for the murder before they determine the sex. Choosing all life over your life meant your death. And you never got a chance to even open your eyes. Sometimes I wonder as a fetus if you fought for your life. Would you have been a little genius in love with math? Would you have played in your school clothes and made me mad? Would
you
have been
a little... You can meet and hear Mark and Molly Hemingway, Robert George, Brian Wolfmiller, Larry Rast, and Will Wheaton at the 2021 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. Making the Case is Friday, July 23rd and Saturday, July 24th at Concordia University, Chicago. Early bird registration is $135. Learn more at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. Making the Case, July 23rd and 24th in Chicago.
Jesus said, "I came that they may have life and have it abundantly." This is Monica Shannon, Life Coordinator for the Southern Illinois District Advocates for Life. We invite you to join your brothers and sisters in Christ for a peaceful, life-affirming prayer vigil from 10 to 11, Saturday morning, March 20th at Planned Parenthood in Fairview Heights, Illinois. For more information, visit sidadvocatesforlife.com. sidadvocatesforlife.com.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
I am beautiful because I am fearfully and wonderfully made.
I am accepted because I'm a part of His family through Jesus' shed blood.
Unity Lutheran School in East St. Louis, Illinois, shines the light of Christ in one of the most impoverished cities in America. Learn how to support their mission work at unityesl.org. Unityesl.org.
Today, with the help of the Holy Spirit, I say yes to God in His ways.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about abortion as a justice issue with Kevin McGarry, president of Every Black Life Matters. Kevin, why do so many in the social justice movement support the abortion industry?
Because the abortion industry pays for them, because the social justice movement lacks principles. It's like critical race theory in the sense that it's really a political movement. It is not about principles and values. It's not about justice. It's not about anything that we can wrap our minds around that we could say, okay, this is what they stand for. Now, this is the standard that we hold them accountable to. No, they use justice and social justice as an amorphic kind of symbolism that seems to shift and change depending on the environment to accommodate whoever would purport to say, hey, I'm a justice advocate. They support it because they're really fundamentally a political organization, funded in large part by large organizations who stand by Planned Parenthood, stand by the black genocide that Planned Parenthood has precipitated, and they march to that beat. Let's face it.
The popular anti-racism ideology seems to have embraced low expectations for black people. How do you respond to that, Kevin?
Yeah, so they do embrace the low expectations to blacks because fundamentally what they're saying is, look, we are all victims. It doesn't matter what we do. It doesn't matter the innate God-given skills that we have or the ability that the Lord put in us to be great and the destiny that was provided for us when He placed us in the womb. We're failures because there is a system and there are individuals, and they purport to be mostly white individuals who are the oppressors, and we're the oppressed. And if you think about it, this playbook is old. It played out. I mean, the Marxist playbook was marked by proletariat and bourgeoisie, and what they've done is they've just changed the names so we can accommodate an environment that's really flighty and not very well educated, to accept oppressor and oppressed. You know, they simplified the notion, right? So it can be digested by the masses. Well, fundamentally what they've said is, look, doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter, you know, what innate skills and abilities the guy gave you. You are maligned. You are subjected to white supremacy and the power structures of whites. Therefore, you could never be anything unless we actually deal with this system. If you're a Christian, if you're a person of faith, you know that undermines completely the Word of God. It undermines and is antithetical that God gave each and every person destiny, that God is the great neutralizer. It doesn't really matter where you are in life. God can reach down and provide you whatever future He desired for you. And there's nothing that anyone or any structure or any race, so-called, can do to you to prevent God's will being done in your life. But it's a comforting position for a lot of people to say, look, I am where I am because they are where they are. They're the ones with all the power, and therefore I can't do any more. It's comforting because it's like I don't have to take responsibility. I'm going to absolve myself of responsibility by actually pointing the finger to them. And as long as they're there, hey, guess what? I can't do anymore.
Finally then, Kevin, can a truly just society be achieved? Because you said at the beginning, we all desire true justice. Can it be achieved as long as abortion on demand is legal?
No, again, I hearken to Dr. Martin Luther King's prescient and sort of prophetic quote, in the sense that it says, if we tolerate injustice anywhere, and again, I'm paraphrasing horribly, but this is the notion. If we intolerate injustice anywhere, it opens the door for us to fully tolerate injustice everywhere. So at its root, at its foundations, life begins in the womb. And it is a gross injustice for us who are in the land of living to make snap judgments about whether this life that I have in the womb is worth anything, whether we should do something about it, whether we should stomp it out. A lot of these justice advocates, I'm going to go on a slight tangential remark. I want to make a slightly tangential remark here. A lot of these social justice advocates talk about the poor. And here's what's ironic, and I take them through an exercise when I have my classes and trainings. Fundamentally, who's the poorest of the poor? And when I ask that question, most everybody, they put this caricature in their mind of a military vet who has no arms and no legs and is trying to move about the street with a sign, you know, he's holding up by his teeth saying, hey, I'm an ex-vet, do you have any food for me? And what I do, the exercise fundamentally takes that down and says, okay, now keep that caricature in your mind and move that caricature down to a person that's 10 years old. Is that person 10 years old worse off or better off than that vet? Now, anybody logically thinking would say, well, the 10-year-old is obviously worse off. The vet has actually had a lot of experiences, knows how to get his hustle on the street, how to plead for help or whatever it is. The 10-year-old, they don't have no idea about how to operate in that world. So a 10-year-old will be worse off and therefore more poor. And then I say, okay, great. Now let's take that down to a 2-year-old. Same condition that you saw initially, but move it down to the 2-year-old. Is the 2-year-old worse off or better off than the person that you had in mind? And invariably everybody says, well, obviously a 2-year-old. You got a 2-year-old toddler running around the street, have no idea what to do, no parents, no nothing, no, just terrible, bad shape. And then I say, well, let's take it down one more. Let's take it to the womb. Who is worse off, the 2-year-old or the one in the womb? Now, here's what's interesting about that. The one in the womb has no way to improve their condition. They cannot cry out. They are completely put upon by the mother who's carrying them. There is no voice at all. So when you think about the poor, the poorest of the poorest of the poor are those in the womb that have no voice and cannot do a thing to improve their condition. A 2-year-old with no limbs is even better off than that, because at least that 2-year-old can roll around until somebody sees him and cares for him and et cetera. The one in the womb has no capacity to improve their condition. So we can't summarily overlay or jump to, hey, the poorest, but the poor, which is who we care about, they're all people in living. No, the poorest of the poor, if you're really sincere, is in the womb. And you can't escape it. So our social justice advocates, we have a lot of pastors to say, no, you know, fundamentally, we just want to care for the poor. While they're pro-abort, they're misguided. You know, it's a long answer to your question, but no, if abortion on demand, we cannot see real justice in America with abortion on demand as it is. No.
Kevin McGarry is president of Every Black Life Matters. He's chairman of the Frederick Douglass Foundation of California and author of the book Just, Justly, Justice. You can purchase this book and learn more about Every Black Life Matters at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Kevin, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Todd. Appreciate it. God bless you.
To kick off Hour 2 on this Tuesday afternoon, we'll talk with Mark Hemingway of Real Clear Investigations about a Washington Post correction about President Trump's phone call to Georgia officials. Stay tuned.
Solid. Serious. substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
LCMS Life Ministry is hosting a virtual life conference, Making Disciples, Valuing Life, on March 19th and 20th. Dozens of experts in life ministry will present and answer questions throughout the conference in on-demand videos and live sessions. Participate in the conference, be equipped to speak up for the sanctity of life, and gain ideas on how to care for life. Join us as we build a team for new life ministry challenges. Register now at lcms-life.org, lcms-life.org.